in the early 1980s when he became Politburo member. He again intensified this preaching to the whole nation to live a more moral life. He demanded greater intolerance of, again, to use his words, indiscipline, social passivity, parasitism, moral nihilism. And he suggested that practically that various social organizations in Russian life, especially those working with young people, help people spend their leisure hours in improving activities, sporting events, amateur artistic festivals he tried to organize, singing competitions on television, art exhibitions, things to raise people's moral level. And once he became general secretary, and after 1988, head of state, president as well, this sort of moral preaching, one might describe it as puritanical moral preaching, reached a real fever pitch. Among his first acts on coming to power was a campaign for sobriety, to end drunkenness, which was such a problem, so widespread, especially among Soviet men. Similarly, he launched a major campaign for work discipline, to encourage people to come to work on time and to work hard while there. Later, equally unsuccessfully, I should say, as these first two campaigns, he launched a major campaign against pornography, which was illegally available throughout the Soviet Union, and against prostitution, which also was illegally increasingly widespread. He also launched a campaign against what he called Western mass culture, culture of the popularity of Western rock music, of jeans, of Western style of individualism, the spread of drugs, of styles of dress, and the like. In general, he's constantly in these years preaching to the nation about morality, about a whole list of sins that he noticed wherever he looked. Passivity, his words again, irresponsibility, arrogance, boorishness, consumerism, materialism, and even Philistine vulgarity, using a great Russian word, poshlost, with a long tradition of something the intelligentsia in Russia in the 19th century also hated. By the way, it's telling that in this light that Gorbachev's first uses of the now famous word perestroika, this was in the early 1980s, before he came to power, referred not to structural changes in politics or in the economy, but what he liked to call perestroika reconstruction of the mind, psychological perestroika, perestroika of consciousness, even perestroika of spiritual life. This is how he first used this term. What are we to make of all this moral preaching? Partly, of course, there are practical considerations. His awareness of the social and economic costs of moral indiscipline. This is especially evident in his concern with drunkenness among workers. It's part of his need for effective leaders, sober, responsible, honest leaders. It's also part of his concern with abuses of democracy by citizens. This was all can be seen as quite practical. But there's more, I think, than pragmatism involved here. I'd even say that for Gorbachev, ethics and morality went to the heart of his ideals about socialism, why he believed in socialism, why he believed that actual socialism needed a major overhaul. His speeches and writings in these years are filled with talk about socialism as humanism, about socialism as leading to the fullest development of the human person. And indeed, he uses that old intelligentsia term, Lichnost, the human personality out of which comes a natural dignity which should a society should recognize. He thought socialism could do this best, that it could best promote human dignity, that it could best promote what he called universal human values. As you can notice, by the way, these are also in some ways the ideas that pervaded the alternative political culture in the years before and during Gorbachev, the sort of ideas that were widespread among the educated in the 1960s and 70s, including dissenters, though of course with roots much older in Russian history. Where Gorbachev differed from this alternative culture, from many of his contemporaries, in fact, educated contemporaries, is that he believed that these ideas, these values, were about socialism and could be used to revitalize socialism, to make it truly work. Which brings us to the question of why he failed. Why he failed to create a viable, humanistic, socialist society of which he dreamed. In part, the failure is simply practical. The economy, despite all his efforts, remains stagnant, partly, many say, because he feared pushing economic reforms too fast that might undermine socialism, but also old problems that were simply difficult to eradicate with any of the measures he adopted. Most of all, though, one might suggest, he failed because too few people shared his vision of socialism.